John Martin and May You Never on Riviera Radio, 11 minutes past 9 o'clock. And good morning to Gavin Sharp from Riviera Wellbeing. Morning, Gavin. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you, on this autumnal morning.
Certainly is. Now, this week, we're talking about managing grief, loss and endings. So where should we start? When you refer to grief, should we start with that one? What exactly, what constitutes grief? Because surely grief, for example, for my pet, a rabbit, isn't the same as maybe for a loved family member?
So I think it is a good place to start, Sarah. Thank you. So I think grief is our natural response to loss. And we always tend to think about grief in terms of death. And it could be death of a pet, death of a loved family member. And of course, a huge part of how we go through the process of healing is by grieving. But for me, grief is this response to loss, and it can be loss of a friendship. It could be loss of financial security. It could be loss of a job. And I think there's often a misconception that grief is this problem to be solved. And actually, grief is not a problem to be solved, but it's a process, and it serves a function. So if I've had a loss, if I allow myself to grieve, it's my journey in which I can heal. But I think as a society, we don't pay much attention to grief. And so if you think about lots of companies and you ask what's their policy in terms of bereavement, it's you get 2 days off. Mm. And that's only going to be for death. And it's probably going to be death of a close family member. But what if it is death of a pet? What if I am grieving the end of a relationship? So long-winded answer to your question, it's a response to loss.
Mm. You know, recently in the UK, they were suggesting that they would actually be giving time off for people that lost a pet because they were considering grieving. Is there a right way to grieve the loss of a loved one?
I think we assume that there's a right way, but in a nutshell, there isn't. And grief is a little bit like a storm. I know this is very cliched, but we just have to go through it. So there's a very well-known therapist who has kind of one of the pioneers in this field of studying death and dying. And her name was Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. And in 1969, she came up with what she called the five stages of loss. And there's been a lot of misunderstanding. These are not stages that we go through 1 to 5. They're not linear. And we can start at number 3, and then we can go backwards, and we can be stuck for weeks or months. But broadly speaking, if we've had a grief, then the stages of loss are, there's denial, which is the stage of just feeling numb. It's not the denial that the person necessarily, let's say it's death, has died. It's just, I can't believe it's happened. Or the person won't clear out the clothes from their loved one's closet yet. There's just this sense of denial, which actually is helping us pace ourselves. We're not ready to experience all of the emotions all in one go. And then we talk about anger, which is when we get to that stage about why. We want someone to blame. And then there's the bargaining stage, which is the if only. If only I had done more. If only I had been driving. If only I'd been a better husband, wife, etc. There's depression, which speaks for itself, which is the sadness. And then there's the very misunderstood phase of acceptance, which is, it's not an end point. It's the fact that I'm at peace with reality. I'm able to accept that my loved one has gone. So the right way to grieve is recognizing that I'm going to go through a roller coaster of emotions in relation to each of those stages. And that may take me weeks, months, years. And on some level, we're grieving forever. It's not something we get over.
Do you think that's affected by others being, we can be quite judgmental as a society as to how people do grieve?
Absolutely. I think that's exactly what we often do because we care. And so we say, gosh, it's been 6 months now. It's been 2 years. I mean, they should be over it. And that could be a relationship, and it could be the pet. And there's this just sense of, why aren't they moving on? And one of the worst things that we can do to someone who is grieving is rush them through the grieving process. And it often says more about me than it does about the person suffering, because I'm finding this really uncomfortable that, you know, Sarah's not moving on and she really should be over it by now, and I don't know how to be around her. So it's important that if we want to care for other people who are suffering, that we don't try and speed up the process.
Okay, we've got quite a lot of questions to get through, so we'll start with the first one this morning, Gavin. Somebody's written in saying, I feel like my pain will never end. I can't snap out of it. I lost my partner last year. Sometimes I feel like I have turned a corner, but it doesn't last. Sometimes I don't want my friends around me. I feel angry and cheated. I'm ashamed to admit that. My kids want me to go back to the UK, but I don't belong there. Maybe I don't belong anywhere. When does it get better, please? And is there, and I know there isn't an easy answer, but I even feel better just writing this.
So I'm probably going to say this several times. I feel for this person's pain. And it was interesting because they said, I can't snap out of it. And my response is that don't try and snap out of it, because allow yourself to be in that place of pain and of grief, because you will survive your loss, but you also, we need to tolerate the emotions that come with it. And so for me, as this person is writing, it sounds like the family, it's the question that you just asked, The family saying, come on, move on. They're coming from a really good place. But this person's written in and said, but I'm still in my anger phase. I feel cheated. I'm angry. And so I don't want to take that person out of the anger, because actually the anger serves a function. And so so I would say for this person that your pain will end. It does feel like it's not going to end. And if you're not ready to go back to the UK, then that's where you are. And allow yourself to be okay with it. Now, don't isolate yourself so that you're completely alone, but follow your gut. And the very last point, I feel better just writing this, it can be a very good way to process grief. Mm. There's very often things that we didn't have a chance to say. And I'll often say in the therapy room, so why didn't you say them? Write them down. Write a letter to your loved one and tell them all the things. Tell them about your anger. Tell them that you feel cheated. And you can read that letter aloud. You can bring it to therapy. You can just keep the letter for yourself. But it is interesting that they said, I feel better just writing this. Grief needs to be witnessed. We cannot heal in isolation.
Yeah, you can't rush it.
No,
is what you're saying. Okay,
yeah.
I hope that helps. Moving on to the second question this morning. My question is whether one can die from a broken heart. My parents have been together for 60 years. I cannot imagine that one of them will easily survive the other when the time comes. They refuse to discuss the possibility or make any plans for what might happen when that day comes. So will one of them die from a broken heart, or is that just in the movies? And my husband says he is happy to be shot if we make 60 years. That's fine by me.
Well, congratulations to your parents for 60 years. That's fantastic. My grandparents were together for 67 years. And everyone's grief is different. So I'm now doing exactly what I'm going to tell your listeners not to do, which is compare grief. But after my grandfather died, my grandmother wanted to carry on living. And that surprised me. So the question is, can you die of a broken heart? The answer is, it's unlikely, and it's something for the movies. There is such a thing as broken heart syndrome. We know that if we are clinically depressed, that leads to many illnesses in our immune system. I think it was researched in Japan, where a sudden trauma causes this surge of hormones, and it could lead to heart failure. The reality, as I understand it, and I'm not a doctor, is that it very rarely happens. And usually there's short-term stress on the heart. We have panic attacks. There can be angina. So it's a bit of a washy answer to the question. You can die of a broken heart, but it's really rare.
Okay, and we've got another question about grieving. Then we'll move on to different ways of things coming to an end. But this one says, I lost my brother to suicide over 9 years ago. It will always be something which my family lives with and struggles with. I tell myself that perhaps he found a more peaceful place, but I'm not sure I will ever understand why it happened. I feel guilty that I did not understand his depression, but he kept it so hidden. Any thoughts from Gavin?
So suicide often leads to what we call complicated grief. I run a weekly women's group online, and it was so interesting because this week three of the women had shared for the first time about members in their family who had committed suicide. So even though it's one of the top causes of death, I think it's something like in America, I think it's something like in the top 10, it may even be the 10th most common cause of death, but there's so much stigma around it. The guilt that this listener refers to is really common, that we feel that there's something that we did wrong. And the complicated grief comes because we just can't get out of the grieving process. We don't know how to get on with life. And I think the challenge for this listener and all people who are affected by suicide, and I realize I'm giving really short answers to such complex question, is how do we move beyond the why? Because some things are beyond our control, and yet we get stuck with the why, and that's where we have the anger. And so sometimes what we have to do is direct the anger towards the pain and not the person. And you know, suicide is not a character defect. It's a sign of someone who's in immense pain. So it may be that your listener won't ever understand why, but it might be they can let go of the why and start to understand what their life was about. But it's a very long process. And they said 9 years ago, and that's why I said at the start of the hour, we live with grief throughout our life. It comes and goes in phases. It's not something with an end point that we get over.
Mm. Do you think the way that as she explains, this person explains about the family are still struggling with it, do you think that can be a solution? That if you have tried maybe to find a peaceful place on somebody close to you or a friend or member of family committing suicide, do you think there can be a kind of like a network in the others that are struggling to talk about it, to not feel? So the whys that we're all asking ourselves, if you air them, it kind of, you find yourself that everybody's asking themselves the same question. Do you think that can be a solution?
I think the solution is perhaps joining a bereavement group, because then there are a room full of people who have experienced death and who have walked in our shoes, and it really helps us to connect to other people, to felt seen and heard. So friends will often say, I know what you're going through. Even if we've experienced the loss, I cannot know your loss. Mm. The reason I slightly avoided your question about the family is because even in families, we're all going to grieve differently. So one person may not be stuck with the why, and one person feels that they now are at the point where I do understand why it happened. And therefore, sometimes we argue because why aren't you grieving like me? Why aren't you stuck in the why? Why do you seem to be moving on? So yes, I think the immediate family, the siblings, other people in the family can possibly help, but we just need to create space that your grief looks different to mine. It's not better, it's not worse, it's just different, because each of us is going to grieve in a unique way.
And we've got another one, Justin. I'm a regular listener of the programme, and thank you for airing it. My girlfriend and I have very different views on grief. We both lost our parents within a similar time period, 6 years ago. And when we were back to Sydney once a year, when we go back rather to Sydney once a year, my wife visits the cemetery. I've never been back to the cemetery since the funeral. Does this mean I'm not in touch with my grief? My girlfriend thinks so. I don't think I am in the denial stage. I just don't see the point. Is this common in Gavin's opinion?
So you timed that question beautifully, Sarah, on the back of what, you know, we were just talking about, which is that you and your wife are grieving, presumably in the way that has meaning for you. And, you know, there's a quote by an author called David Kessler, who, again, has written so much in this field of death and dying. And he says, loss is simply what happens to you in life. Meaning is what you make happen. So both of you are creating meaning in your own way. And for some people, sometimes, again, go back to the family members. One person can be crying and the other person isn't crying. But it doesn't mean the person not crying isn't grieving. So the symbolism of going to the cemetery will bring, I can't remember if it was the wife or the husband, but comfort. Mm. And the other person may not feel the need to do it. It doesn't mean you're in denial. It's just, this is not how I connect to my parents, but I might choose to honor them on the anniversary of the death or on the birthday or by talking about the person. One of the ways that we grieve is we keep the loved person alive because we tell stories. Do you remember when Dad used to do this? Oh my goodness, do you remember when he fell over in the back garden? And all of these things are ways when we tell these stories, and telling stories is so important, we keep the person alive with us. And in that sense, the person has died because they don't exist, but they're still with us.
All right, let's hope that helps. Riviera Wellbeing, it's the Wellbeing Window. This morning we're talking about managing grief, loss and endings. And just after the news, we'll be going on to what constitutes an ending with Gavin Sharp from Riviera Wellbeing. It's just coming up to 20 to 10, and we've got to fit it all in. I'm joined by Gavin Sharp from Riviera Wellbeing. It's the Wellbeing Window on Riviera Radio every first Wednesday of the month, and this time we're talking about managing grief, loss and endings. Thank you for all your emails, and we'll try and fit them in before the international news headlines at 10 o'clock. So, Gavin, over to you. And moving on swiftly, we were talking about, just before the news, we touched on the grieving process and how to protect ourselves, grieving a lost one. Now, on some level, everything ends, and getting married is the end of my single life, but presumably I shouldn't be grieving while walking down the aisle. So, what constitutes an ending? And I'm going to tie a question onto this, which has come in, because it says, it's about weaknesses and endings. It says, please would you be kind enough to ask Gavin why people that hurt inside a long term feel it's a weakness to seek help and guidance to remove, suppress their suffering, and not talking about traditional medicines. So Gavin, what do you make of that in linking it to, of course, what we're talking about, and when you may be going through, whether it's that you've lost somebody or just the end of a relationship or a marriage?
So I think on some level, again, talk, it's a bit of a cliche, everything ends. So for me, an ending is that something that we have has gone. So your question of getting married and walking down the aisle, I'm not grieving, but I am acknowledging that my life as a single man or woman has ended. And so any loss, we have to recognize that, you know, love and loss go together, and any loss is going to cause us grief. But why we don't like endings is because we want to deny it. But if I want to live in the present moment, I need to be able to process and let go of the past. And yet, to the listener's question, there's this stigma that if I allow myself to be sad, that's weakness. And it's grief, and allowing ourselves to grieve, isn't weakness. it's a necessity. It's something that we do. But the listener's right. Society judges the grieving process, and then we need to move on. We need to get on with it. But actually, what I need to do is I need to make sense of the experience. So I need to accept there has been an ending. I have lost something, and I need to make sense of what I've lost so that I can be in this present moment. Otherwise, grief, we just get stuck in the grief.
So it's all about, but when you talk about these time things, like you mentioned earlier about giving yourself, not rushing it, mm-hmm. and going back to what the listeners are saying about it being a weakness. So do you not think that sometimes when we're told not to rush and to take our time with things, we just know that the other people around us are thinking, oh, I just wish you'd pick yourself up and get over this. And it's a lot easier said than done. And even recently they were saying that maybe it was in the UK, there's a report about it, some psychoanalysts were saying that psychotherapists rather were saying that we can actually sometimes spend too much time sitting on the couch and talking about it.
We can, but we have to do what we need to do. And I think the myth is my grief will go away faster if I ignore it, and it won't. And that's why bereavement groups can be so powerful, because you're absolutely right, Sarah. I think friends, after a while, we get back to our lives. So you're grieving, Sarah, because your rabbit has died, and after I come in next month and see you, and I've lost interest now because it was just a rabbit. But if that, I mean, I know I'm being a little facetious, but if that rabbit was meant something to you, why can I not still say, ask you how you're doing, check in with you? So that's why bereavement groups, sometimes rather than friends, because we still get to be in our grief for as long as we need to be.
Okay. And do you think that comes back to limits that we set ourselves? Like, we've always, from childhood, we're given limits, aren't we? Mm-hmm. And do you think that's why we have problems with actually saying, actually, there isn't a limit to how much time I can be feeling like this?
Yes, because I think we learn to that. Very often clients will come into the therapy room and they'll say, I don't want to experience the negative emotions. You know, my father was never very good with anger. And I'm like, well, if you don't want to experience those, you're going to diminish your capacity to feel joy and happiness and all of your other emotions. But we learn sometimes growing up that anger or jealousy or hate, there's no room for these. We must limit these emotions. Mm. So yes, we often learn that.
Okay, moving on to another listener's question, saying, my first time to email you. This is my situation. My father was an alcoholic and absent for most of my childhood. We were not close growing up, although we found some semblance of a relationship in later years. But we never had a strong bond, really. When he died many years ago, I was overwhelmed with loss. I've never understood how, why this knocked me sideways at the time given. I could barely stand the old man. Could you help me, please, Sarah and Gavin? Well, I think Gavin can.
We both can. Let's do it together. I think what this listener is bringing is that what we often grieve is what we didn't have. And so sometimes loss and the emotions connected to loss is, I lost the opportunity to have that relationship with my father. I lost the idealized. I lost the childhood I deserved to have. So I lost the idea of having two parents who were emotionally and physically present. And I'm going to have a roller coaster of emotions connected to that. So it makes sense to me that when that person has died, some of the grief is perhaps for the person who died, but also because we didn't have what I wanted to have. And I'm in touch now with my anger and sadness around that.
And moving on, I hope that helps, and thank you for all your emails. Going to try and fit them all in before 10 o'clock. We've got a few minutes left. This is not about death, but I lost my job at the start of the pandemic. No one had a chance to say au revoir. It took me 4 months to find a new job, and everyone told me how lucky I was. Actually, I'm working for a nice company, but I miss my team, and the role I had before was better. It has knocked my self-confidence. I still dream about going to my old workplace, and my desk is not there.
So, yeah, I'm just digesting that, and that's a great example of an ending that isn't about death. And I think with our jobs, so much of how we see ourselves and our identity is tied into our jobs. And you know, I had a career before I was a psychotherapist, and I worked in the corporate world. And I think it took me a few years to see myself differently. So I think that one of the things that I was able to recognize is that actually my job doesn't define who I am. So I think maybe for this person, maybe there is a way to get in touch with their former colleagues, to have a reunion, to actually, sometimes we need rituals. I mean, that's the difference, I guess, between mourning and grieving. Grieving is the internal process, and mourning is what we do to acknowledge the grief. So it's why, depending on the different religions, we'll have a wake, we'll have a shiver, we'll have a get-together, we'll have a knees up, something whereby we're honoring what just came before. So I would encourage this person, if they can, to find a way to connect with their team and honor that role, honor the work you did together.
Yeah, because somehow that's been missed, and so there's
absolutely
no closure on it.
Yeah.
And well, we've got time for one more. Talk about closure. This person says, do you think when you split up from a boyfriend, a breakup is similar to grieving? I've recently broken up after nearly 20 years with the person that I've shared my life with. We have two children together, but I can't seem to. I have good days and bad days. I know it's not working, and I feel like it's a loss. And on the days where it's bad, it's almost as if I'm grieving that he's out of my life, and I don't know why, because we both seem to have agreed to it.
Yes, again, I think this is I mean, 20 years together, how can you not be experiencing a range of emotions about what's gone before? And so, and the grieving process will depend on the nature of the loss, my relationship to that person, my support network. So there's so many things that will influence the grieving process. And I think it's why I said grief never ends, but we have to find a place for the loss to exist. And I think your listener used the word closure, which I think is, it's not a word that as a therapist I particularly like, because I don't think, as I said before, we get to a point where it's done. I think we get to a point where I can begin to make meaning of what's happened, where I can learn to live with the loss of the 20-year relationship. Maybe I can celebrate what we did have. I can get in touch with my emotions connected to what we didn't have. But absolutely, this relationship is going to be with you for the rest of your life. So allow yourself, you know, I will often say, go back to my analogy before with the storm, allow yourself to go through the storm. And there will be some days, this is classic grief. Mm. There are some days when I can deal with this. Hey, I'm over this. I'm feeling good. And then another day, it's like I watch something on television. Grief is contagious.
Okay.
So, which means that I think I'm doing fine. And I go to someone's funeral out of respect. I didn't really know the person. And I come home and I'm in buckets of tears. I've just watched something on Netflix and I am a mess because their grief touches my grief. So when we talk about loss, I am going to get in touch not just with the loss that I might be experiencing, but all of my previous losses as well. And that's what makes this so challenging and difficult, and why we need to talk about it.
Well, and exhausting, I would imagine, if you have like good days and then you don't know why you're having a bad day. And yes, okay, well, thank you, Gavin, for that. I hope that helps. I hope that Gavin has managed to answer all the emails we've had this morning. Finally, no pun intended, but do you believe in happy endings? Presumably, those are not losses. Come on, just a final note from Gavin.
I'm so happy you didn't ask me to define a happy ending.
Oh, yes, sorry.
No, I pass. Do I believe it? Yes, absolutely. But we still want to honour the fact that something ended. You know, I'll give you a very quick personal example. When I was doing my master's in psychotherapy, and it was really intense, very experiential, and the last day of term, everyone would get together, we'd all go out for drinks. And I used to miss the last day of term. This was not conscious, by the way, until my head of year said to me about halfway through the second year, you know, Gavin, how come you always book your holiday on the last day? I'm like, but I love this course. Why would I? And she said, I think you might want to do some reflection. And I think it's just what I would be in touch with is I may not be in this module again with this group of people. I'm going to miss them. I don't know how to acknowledge the fact that something good has gone. So yes, I think there are such things as happy endings. And I'm taking off my sex therapy hat completely in answering that question, just to be clear.
And finally, whatever you're going through, whatever anybody might be going through at this time, do you have a little tip, an exercise or something that people can do, maybe if they are either grieving somebody or just suffering from depression or having a bad day or stuck in a rut in their life at the moment? Could you give a little tip to our listeners of maybe something that you could just do on a daily basis or once in a while that might help you?
So I think talking about the loss is absolutely key. So share with people who want to listen. And particularly, as I said earlier on, the stories. And that brings that person to life. Journaling can be really useful. Mm. All things that allow us to acknowledge the loss. So I'll just share very briefly a very personal example. So at the moment, my mother's suffering from Alzheimer's. So I'm watching her disappear. And yet not a day goes by when I don't tell a funny story about her. God, you remember how Mum would used to do this? Or sometimes I've got one of her paintings. I recently took one of her paintings home because I want to put it, she used to paint, and I want to put it on the wall. So I'm doing things that connect me to someone that I love, that keep her present. What I don't want to do is run away from it because it's still there. I'm missing the person that she was. So I want to acknowledge the pain. I want to allow myself to go through it. I'm telling stories for other people, journal, draw, but allow yourself to connect to the loss.
Yeah, that helps. Thank you, Gavin, because that was a listener's question that in the they all just came in, and I hope that answered the question to about her father having Alzheimer's. Thank you very much, Gavin, and you'll be back next month.
I'm back next month.
You. What are we doing next month then?
I have no idea. What should we do?
I don't know.
We'll lift it up a bit, maybe. Can I just say
happy endings?
The joys of happy endings. Can you imagine the question we're going to get? Can I say, first, if anything, you know, it's such a difficult topic. Thank you to Riviera Radio for allowing us to talk about this and to bring such an important subject to the forum. And if anyone is triggered by it, please drop me a line. I'll send you a list of resources. But don't be alone in it. And I thought next month we will do perfectionism and shame. How do we kill the perfectionist in us? Because we've all got it, and it is tied to shame. So something around that.
Okay, look forward to it. Gavin Sharp from Riviera Wellbeing with us next month for another Wellbeing Window. Gavin, thank you very much, and thank you for all the emails that came in.
Thank you.